Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Faith? Bye, Faith.
We saw Faith for like 2 seconds and she's like, I'm out.
Catch the Pierce.
saw that Voorhees mask and wanted no part of it. Well, as we wait to officially go live here, even though we're filtering audience members in lieu of Friday the 13th edition of The Rundown, and my 7-year-old put together his best Jason Voorhees mask because we don't really have a hockey mask in a house. So figure why not kick out a fun anecdote for you both. Your favorite horror movie character, if it's not Jason Voorhees or Chairman Powell, because I'm sure he'll make his way into our discussion today. Love your thoughts.
Rob, I'm going to let you go first.
Ladies first.
Okay. So I don't watch horror movies. So I don't have a favorite horror movie character. The closest thing that I could come to would be the three witches from Hocus Pocus.
Bette Midler was frightening in Hocus Pocus.
What is that?
It's close enough.
Hocus Pocus?
Yeah. Have you not seen Hocus Pocus, Rob?
No.
Oh my gosh. All right.
That's Halloween season viewing for you and your grandbaby.
Absolutely.
So I think it's actually you guys have both received some good photos here recently with Cosette. But the one today was excellent. I think it's important. How do you like that? I'll start off by saying that it's important for people to know the difference between a horror movie and a suspense movie. Because when you asked that, Tom, I immediately thought of Sixth Sense. But Sixth Sense is not a horror movie. It is a suspense movie. Alfred Hitchcock, for example, made suspense movies. And the difference, as Alfred Hitchcock explained it, here's you're going down this path. As Alfred Hitchcock explained it, as I recall, maybe this isn't quite it, but it's close enough. A horror movie is when somebody goes into a restaurant with a package and the package explodes. That's a horror movie. A suspense movie is when the person goes into that restaurant with that package and it just sits on the table and doesn't do anything. And that is a suspense movie. So.
See, I'm into suspense movies too, but can't do the horror.
Yeah. You know, the Exorcist, Jaws, The Omen, there have been some classics out there.
Yeah.
I like suspense, not a horror movie.
My boy's great artwork. It's not Jason Voorhees on this end. The clown from It that frightened me for years on end, seeing that way too young of age. As frightening as Amy's, the new Amy.
That's what
Moore
I was just going to say.
Well, anyway, all right. How about horror to mortgage banking?
Horror to mortgage banking. I think
kind of the same thing right now. So,
yeah. Well, on that note, let's welcome everybody formally into the latest edition of The Rundown here. Tom Gallucci filling in for Melissa Langdale today. Got Rob Chrisman in, I won't disclose his location, but getting ready for NBA annual. And
I'm in transit. I'm in Chicago.
I'm in transit. And our great guest today, it's not her first time on The Rundown, I don't believe, is the Vice President of Business Development with Del Mar Mortgage, Victoria DeLuce. Gloria?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. And I do think it's actually my first time on The Rundown.
Okay. Maybe you've chimed in the chat, or I feel like we may have promoted you to panelist once or twice before, but well, it's great to formally have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'll kick right in. I mean, you're well-known next-gen leader in our industry. Through your executive roles through the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association, as well as a respected cap markets professional and thought leader, through past roles at Success Mortgage Partners, Princeton Mortgage, Quicken Loans, Vice Capital Markets, where I believe you got your start. Tell us about your role at Del Mar and how it maybe varies from your past cap markets positions.
No. I want to hear Vic's thoughts on keeping a job more than 2 years.
Just so you know, if you go to my LinkedIn, most of my jobs have been for longer than 5. So
LinkedIn, is that one word or two? LinkedIn. Anyway, go on.
Leave this for the next gen people, Rob. How my role differs. Well, as you stated,
I take a selfie.
So capital markets, this has been what I've really concentrated on for most of my career. But I find that I've had the most success when I've gone into a role that has never existed before. So when I went to Success, they had never had a head of capital markets, and I helped build out that capital markets department. And then I helped build out their consumer direct lending division. And when I came over to Del Mar, which is a phenomenal company, they've been in business for a long time. Super, super great people. They had spent a lot of time working on the business, and they brought me in to make a concerted effort to expand the business. And so very similar in the way that I'm working on something new, but different in the way that my main focus now is not capital markets. I'm taking my capital markets expertise, and it's helping me recruit loan officers.
Exciting. Rob?
Yes, Rob.
The industry is laying people off. Tell us about how that is going on, and yet are you fighting the tide? Are you looking for the hidden gem in the flotsam of people being laid off, cut back? I'll be blunt. I feel, you know, it's only a couple, you know, 10 of us on this call, I think, 10 viewers or so, but many of the people now who are either being let go or are looking for other posts, other positions, are, to be blunt, and I apologize because I know it's not all the case, but many of those people who are looking for jobs may not have had, you know, a great success doing what they were doing. Right. So how do you sort through that? I mean, I guess that's your job, you know, 10 hours a day or 8 to 8 hours a day or whatever it is, to find the diamond in the rough, a branch, a loan officer who might not have fit well the previous post, who now fits better with Del Mar. I mean, what goes through your mind? What's your process in this kind of environment where there's so many cutbacks going on? Is it just a great, great hunting ground?
Well, I feel like it's a little bit of a mixed bag. So we're fortunate enough now to where I'm not really talking to people that don't already have an established business. That's just not our business model. So I'm not talking to people who've been in the industry for a little while or only closing one loan a month. And I have, you know, technology at my fingertips that tells me how much loan officers have closed in the last month, the last year, 2019, 2018. And I'm really trying to get in contact with and create relationships with folks that have already proven themselves. Because I feel like those types of originators are only going to improve their business on Del Mar's platform. And then also it's a personality fit too. I'm fortunate enough to have worked with some really, really amazing people, but you have to sift out through the ones that aren't really amazing. And so that happens through conversations. And so the biggest thing that I will say right now, I would say that the biggest hurdle in recruiting loan officers and branches is the uncertainty that we have in this market, that if they're still closing 20, 30, 40 million a year, they don't want to rock the boat right now, even if they're not completely satisfied with the company that they're at. But I think right now it's all about laying the groundwork for when things do start to smooth out and continuing to improve those relationships. So there are a lot of companies right now that are just hiring people that you know, hiring loan officers that aren't really doing any business. And, you know, maybe when refinances pick up and they think that they might get a few loans out of them, that's not really our strategy at Del Mar.
So you've worked for a few companies, a few lenders, mm-hmm. and seen a few platforms.
Yep.
What makes Del Mar's, you know, without going on the half an hour business lunch spiel, you know, no doubt have honed your time, you know, during your time there, but in a paragraph, what makes a platform better than another platform? And if you want to throw Del Mar's name in there, fine, but what, you know, basically what is the difference?
So I feel like Del Mar is uniquely positioned because they have been in business for so long. We've been in business since 1966, which has given us the opportunity to kind of try different things out and figure out what works and what doesn't work. So we are signed up with all three of the agencies. We have the ability to service. We're signed up with, you know, 35 plus different investors. But more importantly, we've done a really good job of finding the right people. And I feel like people are what makes the difference at any company that you're at. You have to know, like, and trust the people that you work with. There has to be integrity, transparency. Transparency is huge in this market. And I hear companies throw that out all the time that, oh, you know, we're transparent. Like, they're transparent about some things. I feel like here at Del Mar, we're very transparent with our loan officers. So that's the difference. That's the difference maker.
Do they see the investor pricing straight from the investors?
They do in Optimal Blue. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Vic,
thanks for that tee up, Rob.
I'm going to give you another tee up. But we get into some top headlines of the week. You've got a new show. It's called Vic's Vantage. I think somebody on the line has been a guest on your show. It's not me. So process of elimination. And I believe this gentleman may have been your first guest. So here's a free plug opportunity for us. You know, tell the audience about the show, the format, maybe what motivated you to start it. And I'm going to.
Tom, I didn't get the nod for the first guest. I think that went to Chris Bennett because Chris can, you know, you can wind up Chris and let him go and he'll go for 45 minutes.
Amen.
And barely take a breath. Whereas I'm more kind of ponderous and plodding and, you know, I can't quite gather my words and my thoughts and link them in. So I think Chris was the first guest, and then somehow everybody else bailed. And Victoria said, you know, she called me, and even though my hair was in curlers and so forth, I got to go on as guest number two.
Rob was guest number two. He was, and I mean, it's been really awesome so far. So this kind of came to be because a few years ago, I was asked to do some educational seminars and those kind of things for capital markets and. For TMC, actually, at the beginning of the pandemic, Mike Ondrovich and I led the capital markets working group, which kind of became like the Mike and Vic show for a little bit there. We did that for a year. And then I went on to start shooting some videos because folks had reached out to me saying that, hey, look, we love the idea of capital markets. And, you know, it seems super cool and sexy, but I don't understand it. So I just need somebody to break it down a little bit further for me. And so I started shooting some videos that were received pretty well, but I wasn't accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish, which was be able to break those concepts down. But I like talking with people. I don't want to see my face in a camera every day or every week regurgitating the same stuff that everybody's talking about. I want to have a conversation with somebody and get their thoughts and points of view. So it seemed like a natural progression and it's been going really well. Actually, we've been averaging about 2,500 views a week, which has been pretty cool. And then I have guests planned out through December now, and it's been awesome. It's really surprising the types of people that say yes when you ask, like Mr. Rob Chrisman.
It's not as untouchable as everyone thinks. Any teasers as to who's coming up next?
No, you know what, Tom. You know what? I don't want to talk about Victoria's, you know, success, smashing success show anymore. I'm done with that.
Excuse me, Mr. Rob.
You made him jealous.
You know what? Like, I'm scrambling to get a couple dozen readers in my daily commentary. And she's like, I get 2,500 views, you know, whatever. I want to talk about Little League. Okay. Tom, how many kids do you have? One. What? How? Seven?
Seven. Yep.
Seven. Little League?
Little League. We're finishing up flag football right now, but frankly, okay. I can't wait for Little League.
Okay. Let's talk about Little League. And let's say, and what's your son's name?
Franco.
Draco?
Franco.
Oh, Franco.
I said Franco. I was gonna
say, Draco sounds like a horror movie character. All right. Actually, no, that would be Harry Potter. Anyway, so let's say he can't hit the ball over the fence, right? And you're a public-spirited guy. You go to the town hall meeting or whatever, wherever Little League decisions are made or wherever, like, soccer decisions, whatever. And you say, hey, he can't hit the ball over the fence. Can we move the fence in? And they say, okay. Let's move the fence in because he can't hit it over that fence. So let's move the fence in. And so now you can hit over the fence and everything's great. Well, if you are Victoria's like, where in the hell is this going?
No, it's suspense, not horror. It's suspense.
Exactly. The suspense is if I don't like interest rates where they are, I think I'll write a note. I'll go down to the CVS store, buy, you know, spend $8 on a card, Mr. You know, Jerome Powell, you know, yada yada. Please lower interest rates. And I mail it off to the Federal Reserve. That I view as something that's, you know, coming back to the mortgage business here. We all want lower rates. Then you ask, how much lower? Do you want them back at 2.5% or 3%? And originators, everybody says no, because we don't want another pandemic. We don't want whatever economic crisis would happen in order to drive rates back to, you know, 2.5% or 3%. And then you say, well, let's just like lower the spread between treasuries and mortgages by having the Federal Reserve. Let's have them start, instead of peeling mortgage-backed securities off out of their portfolio, let's have them start buying them again. Or let's have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac start buying whatever it is. So, Victoria, I wanted to get your thoughts on, A, the ability for somebody calling up Jerome Powell and saying, please, please, you know, don't sell any more mortgage-backed securities, start buying them again. Or, B, the ability to control interest rates in general or in mortgage rates, you know, through unnatural forces, through non-market forces. And we may have a good debate about this.
It's not going to happen. Jerome Powell is not going to concede to the Mortgage Bankers Association, the National Association of Realtors. It's not going to happen. Now, what's happening right now is exactly what he said was going to happen. It was going to be super painful until inflation came down. And it is super painful. And I mean, as much as I would personally love for me and my household and my friends in the mortgage industry to have lower interest rates and not have to deal with this, yeah, that'd be great. But now what I will say is it's not as if Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve have always been right either. You know, when we started the pandemic off and they started buying mortgage-backed securities, they were actually buying more than we could even produce in a day. And then they had to back it off due to, you know, the guidance of the Mortgage Bankers Association and other organizations like that to get a little bit more in line. But even then, we didn't need interest rates at 2 and 2.5% to achieve the goal that was supposed to be achieved. And in my personal opinion, I do think that they've overshot a little bit. I feel like this one's just a little bit of a slower burn. And this whole idea of a few months ago, we're not going to see a recession. It's going to be a soft landing, all of this stuff. I think they're starting to realize that that may not actually be the case come, you know, Q1, Q2 of next year, but we'll see. But I mean, to take it a little bit further, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Rob. I think that this letter, while well-intended, is really just an answer to a lot of these organizations' members kicking and screaming of like, hey, we pay you guys dues every single year. What are you doing about this?
Well, I don't agree with that, Victoria, at all. Man, you're really hanging yourself out to dry on that one. No, I agree. And whether it is a, you know, whether it's a consultant who's trying to look out for his or her clients and say that they're doing something on their behalf, or whether it's an organization. Yeah. I mean, the industry is suffering and, you know, artificially, and you could debate whether it's artificial or not, stepping in and saying mortgage rates are too high, here's what we want you to do to lower them. And I tell people the same thing. I sound like a broken record, and Ira popped up in the chat box. You know, even if rates were 0%, if I can't find a home to buy in my neighborhood, 0% rates aren't going to help. 5% rates aren't going to help. Now, if anything, 5% rates could help refinance all the people who just got 7 or 7.5 or 8% 30-year fixed rate mortgages. Woe to the investors who bought those at 101 or 102 or 103, because they're going to pay off. But really, the mortgage rates, you know, I mean, you can't peg them in necessarily a free market society. You can influence some of the factors, but really, we're just going to have to get through this. And it's not going to be good.
And I agree with you. And there are a couple other articles that came out as well. And one is the spread of the 30-year interest rate over the 10-year treasury yield. And so let's say that nothing changed, meaning like inflation stays where it is and, you know, or it starts to come down or whatever. We're saying that interest rates over the 10-year treasury yield have traditionally been about 150 basis point spread. And right now they're 300, which is a problem. And there's a few different reasons why that's happening. And one of the reasons is because we have buyers sitting on the sideline for exactly what you mentioned earlier, Rob, is because, you know, woe is the person that buys these coupons at, you know, a super high coupon for 103, 102, whatever, and then they prepay in the form of refinancing, and then they don't exist anymore. And that investor doesn't get their premium back in the form of paid interest. So I did want to, that is just one factor, though, are the buyers sitting on the sideline. Another thing to think about is interest rates are made up of a few basic building blocks. And one of them is the mortgage-backed security price. So that's the basic. But there's also loan level price adjustments, which are driving up interest rates because loans are getting harder. And so you have to price in that risk. And they're getting harder because people are taking on more debt and people don't have as much money to put down on houses. And so you have some of those kind of situations as well. And then the third thing that I'd like to bring up is mortgage companies are no longer able to go super, super thin margin in order to gain market share. We saw this with UWM. Maybe about a year ago, they came out and said, hey, look, we're going to go super skinny on margin because we want to gain market share. And they said that they would not do that long term. And then they haven't. I mean, they reverse because you actually have to make money. You know, who would have thunk? So there,
yeah, who would have thunk?
We have a few different things going on right there. So what are your thoughts on that, Rob and Tom?
I agree 100%.
All right, well, show's over, guys.
There's a contrarian view out there, and I'm just going to give some love to the chat here. Andy's saying, and we have an astute audience, I take affordable housing over lower rates. Philip over at Town saying it sounds like a conversation he just heard on CNBC. Ira, as you mentioned, that, you know, rates still won't help the inventory issue, and some commentary on Powell not being an economist. Mike Sirocco mentions needing deflation. Lower energy costs is the way. And where I wanted to go real quick, the contrarian view, and Ron Q2 puts it in the chat, is where do rates have to go for someone who has a note in the 2.5% to 3.5% range to be motivated to get off the sidelines and sell and buy another home? I saw an article last couple of weeks from Zillow around this, I think stating that like 70% of surveyed consumers said that rates would have to get down to about 5%. To motivate them if they're sitting in the twos or threes to get off the sidelines. Otherwise, they feel stuck right now. So there's kind of that counterpoint that if you were to bring rates down to this level, maybe it moves people off in addition to your point on the refi volume increase. Rob, go ahead.
Okay. Real life example. Not that I'm any big wheeler, dealer, investor, whatever, whatever, whatever. But I did put some money into a 6-month treasury bill 6 months ago. So I get a call yesterday from the bond person. And they said, oh, your 6-month T-bill has come to an end. What do you want to do with this $1,000? I'm like, wow, $1,000. Anyway, that aside, I said, what if I put it back into a 6-month T-bill now, what kind of rate can I get? That person told me 5.5%. So I could go out and buy another 6-month, whatever this fund is, or T-bill, and earn 5.5%. 6-month risk-free short-term treasury money, 5.5%. So first of all, savers out there, I mean, loan officers should be, that's a great point to make with previous clients, is to call them up and say, hey, if you have any spare cash, open up a treasury direct account, you can earn 5.5%. And I know I just put you into a 3% loan a couple of years ago. Use that excess cash and earn 5.5%. That's a great thing for a loan officer to tell a previous client. But when you talk about mortgage rates getting back to 5, I mean, you are talking about mortgage rates moving to less than current six-month risk-free treasury rates, which is a huge move. It's a big move. So, I mean, people throw out that 5% number is kind of a nice round number. But I think getting there is going to take a long time. And I just don't see it. I think we're stuck. And I think the industry is stuck with overcapacity. And I think that the good companies that I talk to, unfortunately, they continue to have to make some very tough decisions. They can't say, well, we can't make it unless rates go down to 5%. You can't do that. You have to make changes now. Going back to the Little League analogy, hey, you know, let's go work on your swing. Let's work on your hand-eye coordination, not bring the fence in so we can hit a home run.
One other thing that I would bring up is, yeah, I do think we might be stuck, but there's always something around the corner that we're not seeing, like, you know, a war, those kind of things. And I do think that there's a likely chance that if this thing with Israel and Hamas continues to grow, that could change the trajectory of what we've got going on for the global economy and, you know, here in the United States. So just another thing to keep in mind. I mean, we thought that we were going to hell in a handbasket back in 2019 and then a pandemic hit. So you never really know what's right around the corner.
That's a great point. And I'll give you one more.
Interest rates.
That's right. Well, we're loving a chat from the Don of the Mortgage Collaborative, our lender board chairman, Stephen A. Milner. The cure to return to normalcy will only occur if the existing housing inventory increases. The only way that will occur is if rates go to 5.5%. If that occurs, then sellers will be willing to give up their 3% rates, resulting in an increase in housing inventory. This will result in an increase to buyer demand. And then Ron replies, but the industry loves a good recession. Well, thank you, Stephen, for the commentary. Real quick before we wrap up this week, I know Director Thompson had some comments. You know, loan buybacks have been a hot button in our industry of late and have been adding additional stress to lenders out there. And she made some remarks about FHFA working on providing some more clarity to its framework and potential use of alternatives amid a spike in Fannie Freddie buyback requests. I'll quote her directly here. We want to figure out a way to balance the repurchase risks and repurchase alternatives in a way that makes sense for everybody, because I'm sympathetic to the environment that we're currently in. But I'm also sympathetic to making sure that purchase loans are heavily manufactured the way our expectations require, And I realized that we're in a completely different environment right now with interest rates, and repurchasing those loans in this high rate environment certainly causes losses. She goes on to mention that there could be some ways, potentially with supplemental information in loan files that could help support DTI ratios, but essentially pivots back to FHFA seeing a downward trend in terms of repurchase request of late, but would like to get in place repurchase alternatives, making sure both parties, the enterprises and the sellers, have a good understanding of what those requirements are. Vic, I'm curious, from a Del Mar standpoint, I don't know if you guys feel that and see it in the same way, where there's a downturn in those requests of late. It's not something we're necessarily hearing from our lenders as of yet.
This is what I'll say. I think Sandra Thompson watched mine and Rob's second podcast, because this was one of the topics of conversation that we discussed, which was, as a mortgage industry, yes, we made a lot of money, but we put a lot of work in to doing all of those refinances to bolster the economy, which was a tool that the Fed deployed, and we carried it out, and now we're being punished. And yes, there are some bad actors out there, but I'm pretty sure the majority of us did the best that we possibly could. What I do like in there is that they're trying to come up with some alternatives versus repurchases. And I don't know, why don't you create your own scratch and dent market, Fannie and Freddie? Like, don't pin it on a $500 million lender to go out and try to play in that space. I mean, regularly anyway. So, I mean, just there are some good things in that commentary, but we've still got a long way to go.
Well, I appreciate taking that in the spot. No,
that's a real cute one.
That's where you should take your earnings from your 6-month CD and put it in a savings bond for your granddaughter.
Little Cosette, yeah.
Yeah. Let's lighten it up to close this out today. NBA annuals kicking off this weekend. I love showing or sharing pro tips for, maybe first-time attendees or folks that haven't been there in a while. But I'm curious, Rob, Vic, what are you most interested in seeing or experiencing in Philadelphia this coming week for the annual?
You want to go first, Rob?
Well,
Maroon 5, right?
I'm silver tongued devil here, kind of running on batteries a little bit. So there are certain goals that an IMB has in going to Philadelphia.
It's Cosette.
It's calling right now. Stephen Milner is calling me to anyway. A lot of IMBs are looking for HELOC programs. They're looking for standalone second programs. They're trying to look at underserved markets. What's new out there? They aren't necessarily trying to move the fence in. They aren't there to lower interest rates. They're there to figure out, how can we adapt to the current environment? How can I, round out the lineup of products that my loan officers have? Trying to see who's doing what out there. It's not like there's a brand new, at least that I've heard of, whiz bang new QM program or new QM investor or Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. I've actually heard of a couple of new servicing buyers, which are interesting, but really it's trying to, hey, here we are and touch base with everybody. And, I'm going just to walk through the exhibition hall and see who's spending, 10 or 15 grand to have a booth that nobody goes to. Did I say that? I'm sorry. Sorry, MBA. That was bad. Like I said, it's only like 10 or 20 people on this call, right?
Just a couple of our close intimate friends.
I'll take the front here, because that's super awesome that you're going to walk through that. But I'm a child of the 90s and the early 2000s, so I'm going for Maroon 5.
There you go. And for our country fans, Tim McGraw will be there. I'm honestly intrigued to see John Meacham's keynote, just being a Politico nerd. But pro tips, I'll kick it off here. Like most NBA conferences, typically hotels are pretty well spread out. So if you're not meeting with folks at the convention center, leave time in between meetings. Don't be like me in past years. We are residually 10 minutes behind all day and apologizing to everybody you meet with and disheveled from it. Take Rob's advice. Be the minority that makes their way through the expo hall and see some of the new solutions. Engage, you know, who's got the coin to spend for the big booths. And, you know.
Stay out of unlit. Don't go out. It's not like Nashville.
Yes.
Where everybody like goes down the street and you go in anywhere and it's like populated and crowded and so forth. The NBA, I think, sent out a like, please stay in certain areas kind of email. Be careful.
Yeah.
Stay
close to City Center. If you're a Cowboys, Giants, or Commanders fan, do not wear your gear or let anybody know. It's Eagle City.
And always one that I like to throw out to the ladies, bring your flats. Don't be me 10 years ago wearing heels into all of these types of events. Bring your flat shoes.
I think, cheesesteak Pete's? Isn't that the deal, Pete's?
I've only been to Philly once. I'm not the authority, but.
Pats. I will be at Pats.
And if you are a first timer, learn from somebody who's also made this mistake. Don't drink too much.
Yes, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You want correct. To be on point for your early Monday or Tuesday morning meeting, right? Meanwhile, Rob's getting flack for his cheesesteak suggestion is a tourist locale. So,
yeah.
Bring your see Rob, glue him into a good cheesesteak place, please.
All right, send me an email. Send me an email. I've got a list of places that I'm going to go and that are recommended by a local.
Well, on that note, we'll call it for this Friday. Everybody joining in Philly, safe travels this weekend. Rob, Vic, thanks for your honest, candid feedback, throwing a couple bombs this weekend. Don't jinx it for Friday the 13th tonight. Beware of full moons and walk in packs when you're in Philly. Be safe, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Victor.
Thank you. Bye.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.